Welcome back, everyone. We're Simply Bitcoin. We break down the news from Twitter, the Daily Fail, meme review, software releases, hardware releases, and the websites by plebs. All right, let's dive into the numbers.
Number time!
Number time is brought to you by Bitcoin 2022. If you guys didn't see, I've been holding it in, but Phil was just announced that he's going to be a speaker and myself. So get your tickets now to the largest Bitcoin conference ever. Bitcoin 2022 is going to be in sunny Miami Beach, Florida. You can take advantage of the link down below for 10% off your ticket to Bitcoin 2022.
At the time of this recording, the block height is 716,301. The Bitcoin price, 47,310. Chain rewrite day, 760. Total public lightning capacity, 3,308. We're actually up a bit. Moscow time, 21:14, and blocks to the halving, 123,699. Nico, those are the numbers. Boring AF. And before, you know, before we dive into a little number banter, we are going to be, as Nico explained, okay, in a previous episode, we are going to be introducing YouTube Shorts and Clips. All right, we're going to be doing both, guys. We're going to start dropping tomorrow, okay? We're going to start dropping the first clip, and we really want your feedback, okay? We want to know what you guys think. We want to know, you know, like, what you guys think we can do better, what we can change, all that good stuff. So we're going to be dropping them. We're looking for your feedback. We're super excited to bring this to everyone. It just kind of helps, right? We can condense the narrative and make it into, like, nice little short clips, right? So you don't have to, you know, you don't have to watch just entire episodes, or you can just refer people to the individual clips, because sometimes you just want to give one specific piece of information, and that kind of helps. Anyways, Nico, you excited?
Yeah, man, I'm super excited. I think it's you know, if you don't have the time to, we get this a lot where, you know, you don't have the time to watch that that day's episode because, you know, you have work, or you just don't feel like looking at our faces for an hour and a half, whatever it is your reason, you know, you could essentially just watch the clip. And what Phil and I are going to try to do is that clip is going to show essentially the highlights of the episode. So the really good points, either in the fail and the meme review or during the daily news, that we thought are important, and we're going to just condense it so you don't have to watch the entire show if you don't want to. And then also the shorts is essentially the TikTok style format, where, you know, you could watch it on your cell phone, on your iPhone, on your Android, whatever floats your boat. And, you know, it's a short little 60-second clip, and it's edited in a specific way. So the reason we're doing this, guys, is, you know, not everyone has the time to watch the full long hour-long show. So, and we've got this requested a lot, so we did a little bit of research, and that's what we're going to be doing from now on. But don't worry, we're going to organize it in a way where you'll be able to tell what is a clip, what is not a clip, what is the show, etc., etc. So don't worry. But anyways, Phil, check this out. Some signal from Glassnode. By the way, I want to point this out, okay? And I keep seeing tweets, and I keep saying this, and I'm going to keep saying this until the end of the year, okay? The reason that we don't focus on speculation, and we don't use, you know, the metrics and all that BS that was flouted around this year, is because at the end of the day, and even though a lot of these people are my friends, it is speculation. No one knows the future. I think 2021 really proved that you could have a $700 a month Glassnode subscription. You could be the best TA guy, but everybody got it wrong. There was only a couple people that I know, and none of which are from the mainstream Bitcoin speculation community, that are essentially arguing the whole, you know, elongated cycles, diminishing returns narrative, right? But let's see if that plays out even. I don't know. And this is exactly why we avoid that type of conversation altogether, because we like to focus on the signal. And when we mean signal, it's stuff that you can independently verify, right? It's not speculation. It's stuff that, you know, we either pull the articles from good sources, and you could do the research yourself and come to your own conclusions. Anyways, back to this. Check this out, guys. This defeats a lot of the BS narratives. This is the fees. And check this out, Phil.
Hey.
Nothing, right? And you know,
but
this
I thought they go up forever, Nico. I thought that it was going to become impossible. And I mean, didn't Vitalik right make that comment?
Vitalik about the fees. Vitalik is a hypocrite, dude, because he said that the whole bigger fees thing, and then his network ended up being more expensive than Bitcoin. So I don't even want to hear it from him. But anyways, important part is this was 2017, 2018. This was the whole fork wars, the whole you need bigger blocks and you need bigger things and blah, blah, blah. And a lot of these fees, I suspect, were from essentially the alternative shitcoin Bitcoin platforms like networks like BSV, Bitcoin Cash, were actually spoofing Bitcoin and spoofing Bitcoin transactions to make it seem like you needed the bigger blocks, right? But as you can see, look. You know, we had a little bit of a spike. You know, this, I think this was due to obviously the price, bigger price, people sending Bitcoin to and from exchanges to try to take advantage of, you know, the speculation, try to trade it. But dude, nothing hit as much as the 2018 bull run. Now, the end of 2017. Now, you could take this in a couple ways, right? This means essentially we haven't reached the parabola of Bitcoin yet. Right, if you want to kind of take it from a speculation standpoint, and if you actually see the amount of Bitcoin activity and the amount of Bitcoin addresses, it correlates a lot to this. And obviously, it's a different type of chart. But as you can see, there's a big boost in the activity on the Bitcoin network in 2017, at the end of 2017, early 2018, and then you know we had a little bit of a boost when we reached the first all-time high back in May, April, and then the last one, I think it was like early November or before that. But you know, you kind of see the activity. So you could kind of see this from two standpoints, right? We haven't reached the parabola phase. That's kind of the, you know, you could see it from that standpoint. Another standpoint that I see it from is it really defeats the narrative, right? And this narrative was that, you know, the blocks needed to be bigger because you needed more transactions. I think Lightning Network is taking care of the small transactions, right? Lightning Network has, I don't know how much bandwidth, I don't know if that's the correct word, but it's a huge amount. So this just defeats the shitcoin narrative in so many ways. I don't know if this, I don't keep up with Ethereum, but I know that Ethereum was having a huge problem this year in terms of the fees. They were just completely full. And it was actually granddaddy Bitcoin that was cheaper than Ethereum. You know, haha, Vitalik, take that. I don't know if that is the case right now, but I know that was it was the case for a couple months in the middle of the year. So, dude, another narrative. Once you think you know stuff about Bitcoin, Honey Badger always surprises you. Phil?
Yeah, again, right? People don't know. People don't know what's going to happen. Right. I know we want to pretend that we know what's going to happen. But again, you know, we've said this 100 times on the show. This is a hybrid, you know, this is a hybrid asset. OK, that also is, you know, a massive network, provides communication, provides censorship resistance, right? Provides all these qualities that we always discuss. People don't understand. And on top of that, it's a scarce, you know, it's a scarce digital asset. People don't understand. None of us do understand exactly what's going to happen. I do want to point out, though, that the Bitcoin speculation community sounds like a shitcoin. The BSC shitcoin, right? It, for some reason, it just sounds like it could be that, right? Like somebody can go and make a shitcoin out of the speculation, which, hey, that totally exists, right? That's what DeFi is, to a certain extent, which is really CeFi. But anyways, going back to this whole thing, right? I got to tell you, you know, I'm not a miner and I've never worried about the fees because the point is that every single time I've done a transaction, I just want my transaction to go through and I'm happy to pay for the network that is providing this service, right? Like, don't get me wrong, but with the banking system, right, we're getting like, we are paying so many different fees, so many underhanded fees, fees for things that they don't actually even do. Okay. And when they, and often with banks, I mean, at least it's been my experience, when they go and raise fees, okay, I've had this conversation with them. You give them a call and you talk to them and you say, okay, well, so tell me, you know, what value, what more are you offering me to charge me more for this? And they never have an answer. Well, it's administrative, back office, you know, stuff. Okay. So what are you doing? How's my experience getting any better? It's not. It's never getting any better. Whereas with Bitcoin, you're paying exactly for what you're getting. Okay? You're getting transaction finality. And that is what you're paying for. And that is what you're opting into. Well, one of the reasons that you're opting into it. So going back to that whole, you know, the shitcoiner narrative, right? Like, oh yeah, you know, Bitcoin needs to have bigger blocks, this and that. No, no, no. Okay? All that has to happen is Bitcoin is a low time preference hybrid asset. And as a result, the development around it, okay, it takes more time. And we can see as a result, it's more solid. So if you ask me, it's worth it. And yeah, you know, we put our money where our mouths are and we pay for it, right? We use Bitcoin, we transact in Bitcoin. And as a result, right, we pay those fees and it's perfectly fine. Absolutely. And they're low. And they're low right now. It just so happens they're super low. But yeah, it's like it's awesome, right? It's awesome to see these price levels and see the fees going this low. It just destroys all their narratives.
Dude, I think it just, like, even, you know, the legendary Matt Odell was expecting higher fees. I didn't know enough. So I listened to everybody, but I wasn't expecting this or that. But, you know, I think it's a pleasant surprise. But listen, to be accurate, I just looked up the Ethereum fees while we were recording. Mm-hmm. So I was right in essentially saying that right now, I'm looking at this as 16 cents per transfer. I'm looking at the Bitcoin fees right now. If you want to send it and you want in the next block, it's 12 sats. Per byte, and it, you know, that's $1.49 Ethereum right now. If you want to send the next block, I guess that's what they use. It's 16 cents. So to be fair, it is cheaper, but you also have to understand what it is you're paying for. And we've pulled up this site many times, which essentially makes it how many confirmations is one, you know, Bitcoin confirmation compared to Bitcoin. And if you want the same level of security, Bitcoin is still faster than the other guys, right? And again, so that $1.49, right, you're also paying for the network that is decentralized, a network that is immutable, right? Ethereum, you're paying for something that it's a centralized network. That's really what it is. And dude, once it moves to proof of stake, you're essentially at the behest of the people that own the largest bags on the network, right? Which kind of sounds exactly like the fiat system today. So I just wanted to be accurate and specific, but if you do take a look at the Ethereum fees, it was in the middle of the year. We actually did a couple fails on this, was that, dude, the Ethereum fees were through the roof. I think it was like $114 to include it. It was some ridiculous amount, right? But again, you know, fees vary. You know, the Bitcoin network, they've been lower as well, right? So it's just this moment in time. I just think it's absolutely hypocritical and hilarious when you see that type of rhetoric from Vitalik. And here's the thing, look, and you know, the Block Wars, a major part of this was about this. It's that, like, I don't think, and Phil, I'd love for you to chime in on this. I don't think you could scale on the base layer, right? I think it was even Satoshi that actually said that, right? The base layer was never meant for coffee transactions, right? The base layer is essentially, you know, if you want transaction finality, right? But for those small transactions, right, you know, I think Lightning Network is more than enough. And Lightning Network is significantly cheaper than Ethereum, right? It's, you know, it's literally cents, like a fraction of a cent. Correct me if I'm wrong, Phil. And Ethereum is 16 cents, right? So, and imagine if Ethereum goes up in value, it's going to be even more expensive, right? That's just this moment in history. So I think that this whole narrative of scaling on the base layer without sacrificing decentralization is BS. Because if you sacrifice decentralization, which is exactly what BSV and Bitcoin Cash did, then it's super easy to freaking scale. Right? But how many people could run a node that's 5 terabytes? You know, the reason that Bitcoin nodes are 300 gigabytes is so that the you know, the barrier to entry is low, so that as many people as possible could run nodes, therefore the network is decentralized, right? That was the whole basis of the block size war. And I think that any person or anybody that's making the argument of, yes, we could scale on the base layer, is really not taking decentralization to heart. And I think that the most important part of a cryptocurrency is the decentralization aspect. If you get rid of decentralization, might as well use PayPal. Essentially, it's essentially the same thing. Phil, am I wrong in any of this?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it's exactly what you said, right? We're searching for transaction finality, right? We're searching for censorship resistance, and at the same time, decentralization. Like if we would want to group, right, the three main, for me anyways, the three main things, like that's exactly it. And look, there's always going to be trade-offs. And I think that that's what's important, you know, for people to understand. You know, quite often, you know, you'll end up seeing that Bitcoiners talk about the trade-offs, right? Whereas you'll often see with these, you know, with these shitcoin projects, they're just telling you all about the unicorns and how amazing it's going to be and how it's going to change the world and all of this wonderful stuff. Like, yeah, Bitcoin definitely touts, well, I shouldn't say Bitcoin, but Bitcoiners, right? Like tout about like its world-changing effects, but not without the trade-offs. Like it doesn't just happen, you know, in a vacuum where everything is wonderful just because of this. It's not. Like there are going to be challenges. Like, you know, I know this is going to, okay, I'm not going to go off track. I'm not going to go there, okay, but we're going to stick to this. But the point is, okay, is that going back to what you said, okay, Bitcoin solves a specific problem. There was a specific issue with the money. Bitcoin solves it. Satoshi had mentioned that at some point, okay, there could feasibly come a time where the fees on the base layer for transaction finality are too large for coffee and those types of purchases. And in that case, that is why there would be a layered approach to this. Now, I do want to give a bit of a, I guess you'd say a contrarian point to this, because this is, I believe that this is true to a certain extent. Lightning does introduce a certain amount of centralization above Bitcoin. Okay? It does. Because if business is right, like LN Strike, right? If they go and host these massive nodes and have all of this Bitcoin, that's a massive, you know, that's a center point right there. So what we can do, right, in order to have this lessened, okay, this is where we encourage people to run their own nodes, right? Run your own node, run your own Lightning node, learn to become a routing node, okay? Like this is the whole point, is that every one of us can be our own bank. Okay, we don't want to have to trust all these central points. And that's the thing. Lightning by default is not centralized. Okay, when you go and open Lightning channels, I can open one with Nico directly. He can open one with me directly. We don't have to talk to anyone else. Okay, but it can, if you know, if done incorrectly, it can lead to centralization on a higher level. And that does bother me. So I do think that that's something we need to be concerned about. I think it's something that we need to, you know, that we need to pay attention to. And that's why we have to educate people to run their own nodes and to decide to learn how to be a routing node. And as well, I think that that's also kind of a call to action, right? Like as though the devs don't have enough to do, right? I think that's kind of a call to action to them to say, hey, you know, if we want to get more people doing this, there's already been amazing work done in Bitcoin, but the user experience has to continue to get easier, right? And unfortunately, there'll be a trade-off there too, because when you make things easier, you do a lot of stuff under the hood that is unseen. And that leads to other conversations. Anyways, this just goes on for ever and ever.
No, I mean, dude, I pulled up fees and we ended up on Lightning. Because that's, man, and this is, you know, and this is why this whole war thing was so contentious. This is why, and again, it goes to show there is no perfect solution. There's just trade-offs, right? And that's what something that Bitcoiners talk about all the time. And that's something that shitcoiners do not bring up, and they don't bring it up because it goes against the unicorn that they're trying to sell you. But anyways, Phil, it's time for
the Daily Fail. The Daily Fail is brought to you by none other than, that's right, we say it every day, Amber app. Check them out, amber.app. It's the easiest way to buy Bitcoin. It's a Bitcoin stacking app by actual Bitcoiners. The link is down below. So I heard that Yellow would be having a space every single day playing Don't Stop Believing until we get to 100K.
Don't Stop Believing.
And I think I saw one day where he didn't do one. Am I right? Am I wrong? Yellow?
Hold to that feeling.
Amber, the smart way to stack sense.
All right. We knew that this was going to happen. We knew that this was coming. We've talked about this, okay? And what are we talking about? Korean crypto exchange CoinOne will no longer allow withdrawals to unverified external... Yes.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Not only did we know this was coming, guys, we also told...
I can't even say the title.
We also told you guys this was coming. We've told you guys this was coming from... almost a year now, we've been screaming this off the roofs. Anyways, Phil, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. It's like this is so bad. This is so crap. We can't even finish the first line. Okay? And like, there's like a whole bunch to go through. We can't even get through it. Okay, here we go. So, Korean crypto exchange CoinOne will no longer allow withdrawals to unverified external wallets. What are we talking about? We're talking about your Ledger. We're talking about your Trezor, your hardware wallet. Maybe you run Bitcoin Core. Okay, that's an external wallet.
By the way, and they're this is coming here, guys. Okay, you think this is coming here. This is foreshadowing. Okay, anyways, Phil, I'm sorry. I'm just very angry. I know. This makes me angry.
Oh, no, dude, it makes me so angry. And we're going to dive into some points that I think are going to infuriate us even more. Okay, here we go. CoinOne, one of the big four crypto exchanges in Southern Korea, announced Wednesday that it will no longer allow withdrawals to non-verified external wallets. CoinOne users will have to register their external wallets with the exchange, or else they will no longer be allowed to withdraw their funds held at their exchange accounts. External wallets include any wallets that third parties offer, including hot online wallets and cold offline storage options. But these wallets must be registerable or verifiable, i.e., they must have know your customer information in place. Absolutely. We've already, I mean, you know what, we'll provide a link, Nico, I'll give you the link to the episode that we had Dr. Ron Paul on, and we could link to that in this, because, you know, people should really check out that episode on KYC. I mean, this guy's a KYC expert and completely dismantled its use case inside out. Okay. Anyways, it is impossible to register a wallet address that cannot verify identity information, said CoinOne. Since wallets such as MetaMask and Ledger do not require KYC, CoinOne users won't be able to withdraw their funds to these wallets. So they're just mentioning Ledger, but we all know that we're talking about every hardware wallet. Mm-hmm. We're talking about if you host a node, right? We're talking about all of this stuff. So this is dangerous, shitty stuff that doesn't offer any protection, and we're going to provide receipts to show you how much money and time that they are wasting with this garbage. Anyways, custodial wallets such as those offered by exchanges like Binance and FTX require KYC, and hence these can be verified with CoinOne. What did we say before about the rails? They just want to force you onto their rails. Hey, listen, banks are thrilled that you custody all your money with them, right? You don't really get to have anything. All you get is this. They give you this crappy little card, and then you ask for permission every single time you want to buy anything.
And that's exactly
what they want.
This is what they're doing, dude. Look, as long as you send it to other exchanges, which we have total power over you for, yeah, that's okay. But you see how they use third party? If it's a third party provider, you mean us, the people, right? So you can't use your own wallet. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to set a narrative. They're trying to make you believe that without this system in place, and this is a totalitarian system, this is to control you. We brought the receipts. We brought a KYC expert to tell it from himself. And he spent years doing the research. And he essentially... this stuff does not work at stopping crime. This is systems of control that governments have to essentially control you. Dude, if you control what someone can and cannot spend money on, then you control them, right? And this is absolutely terrifying. And I'm worried because I know this is coming here without a doubt. Anyways.
CoinOne said it needs to ensure that customers are not using crypto for illegal activities such as money laundering. Yeah, we're going to dive into their money laundering a little bit later. CoinOne customers need to submit information such as their full name, email addresses, and registered mobile phone number in order to verify their wallets. So there you go. This is where, you know, this is where they're beginning to create their little web, you know, their points of your you know, your data points. It's likely that other big Korean exchanges, other big Korean exchanges, including Upbit, BitHum, and Corbit, will announce similar restrictions, such as CoinOne. Found this interesting thing. 27 informative money laundering statistics in 2021, and this is actually this is really well done, because they went and pooled all of this information together from all these different sources and just stuck it into one place. And because we've been covering this for so long, it's actually, you know, like it actually coincides with everything that we've covered. So let's dive into it, right? According to 2019 anti-money laundering statistics, 60.5% of the bank's fines were due to anti-money laundering regulation violations. Mark Murphy, CEO of Finergo, a startup software that helps financial institutions recognize illegal transactions, believes the new and complex rules have contributed to this surge in fines. Okay, so I want you guys to think about that. Banks almost hit an all-time high in fines of $10 billion in 2019 for violations of anti-money laundering policies. So think about that, okay? A lot of times, this is what we've explained in past episodes, people get caught up in this. We're talking people that didn't even do anything scammy, okay? This massive, massive red tape catches all kinds of people. But unfortunately, it doesn't do a good job of stopping the actual crimes. Anyways, criminals have included cryptocurrency in their money laundering techniques. Cryptocurrency is becoming one of the many destinations of illicit funds from criminals. In 2019 alone, Chainalysis traced a total of $2.8 billion in Bitcoin moved by criminals. More than half of this amount went to two exchange platforms, Binance and Huobi. So that's kind of interesting, but you'll see this. It unravels a little bit more. Okay. So Standard Chartered Bank continues to make headlines with its seemingly habitual anti-money laundering violations. Right. Remember how they explained, right, in the previous article, it was being explained to us that by implementing these KYCs, this KYC program on quote-unquote third-party wallets is somehow going to deter money laundering. They've got KYC all over the system. Everything I'm reading to you is from a KYC'd system. Anyways, Standard Chartered Bank has a couple of money laundering examples up its sleeve. The British bank found itself penalized yet again for its leniency in implementing anti-money laundering regulations. The U.S. Treasury Department has also chastised the bank for transacting with U.S.-sanctioned countries such as Sudan, Syria, and Iran. The bank was ordered to pay $1.1 billion to the U.S. and the U.K. This isn't the first time U.S. agencies have imposed fines on Standard Chartered Bank. From 2001 to 2007, the bank was ordered to pay $667 million for violating anti-money laundering regulations. Pay to play. That's all it is. These people, these aren't the people that go to jail. It's the little people, right? It's the individuals that go to jail. These companies slapped on the wrist, they pay the fine, life goes on. It's next weekend at the country club. The anti-money laundering software market is projected to reach $1.77 billion by 2023. So I thought that this point was actually really interesting, right? Because as we've shown, and as we will show, all of these KYC regulations don't defeat money laundering. They cost, I think it's 10 times as much as they bring in, or 100 times, or 1,000 times. I don't remember what it is.
I think, according to Ron, Dr. Paul's research, they stopped 0.1% of the total money, the crime that they collect back. So, like, and you know, this is the conclusion that, and I really recommend this episode, guys, and we'll put it down in the link description, where he comes to the conclusion, are these money laundering laws there to support the bureaucracies themselves? Is it there to support the market of $1.77 billion, or is it there to actually fight and stop crime, right? So you kind of have to ask yourself that if the measures taken in place, they're not measured by their success. There's no metrics of, are these working? Is this actually stopping crime? That's not in the conversation. Anyways.
Identity theft has become one of the top money laundering trends. The number of cases of data breach and identity theft in recent years is alarming. What's even more troubling is that criminals use some of the stolen identities for money laundering activities specifically. This relatively new scheme makes the Know Your Customer guidelines a crucial part of anti-money laundering initiatives. How much of that information is taken in KYC processes? How much of that identity theft information? Because I want everyone to think about all of the breaches that we've thought about, that we know about to date, right? That a lot of that information was information that we provided to these companies as part of a process for signing up, for validating who we are as people. This is total bullshit. Okay, this is complete bullshit. The combined efforts of nations to combat money laundering seems to be ineffective. According to a study by, oh, look at that, Ronald F. Paul from La Trobe University in Melbourne, Australia. Using global statistics on money laundering, this researcher has found that only 0.1% of illegally gained funds are recovered from criminals. This leaves lawbreakers and organized groups free to use the majority of their funds for criminal acts. Right there, we're citing Ron Paul in this article, and I mean, it's... So we know that this information is absolutely coming full circle. So here we go. This part I thought was really interesting, and I wasn't aware of this, okay? To combat the staggering money laundering statistics, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network has maintained the all-cash purchase threshold of properties to $300,000. This means that the agency may impose reporting requirements and records when purchasing a real estate property for $300,000 and above in cash. I didn't know that. I didn't realize. I thought that you could purchase any property for any amount of cash. I never realized that any of that was reported. I mean, that's totally naive of me, right? Because considering that they impose, right, you can't travel with more than 10K across a border. Or even if I'm not mistaken, onto an airplane without claiming it.
You can't do anything, dude. This is what they're trying to tell you, is that we've built a system, or Satoshi built a system, better said, that doesn't require any of this. People are allowed to transact freely anywhere around, no matter where they are born, and look at the alternative. They are trying to say that without these systems in place, everything burns down. They're wrong. What burns down is their jobs and the bureaucracy. That's what burns down. Because this is parasites. These are parasites. They're trying to extract value out of something that's there, right? And then essentially what they're, and you saw the numbers, dude, it only stopped. Criminals are gonna break the law. That's why they're called criminals. Do you think that money laundering is gonna, that this, all this type of BS regulation? And here's the really effed up part, Phil, okay, is that you can't save in cash, inflation. You're forced to invest into companies that are completely overvalued. You're forced to put your money in real estate. And now you have an alternative, which is Bitcoin, something that can't be debased, it can't be confiscated, it can't be censored. No, they can't have you having that. That's impossible. That's dangerous to democracy. You know, you're going to money launder. Like, you have to understand the war that is happening. These people want to keep you in the system no matter what. And there's an alternative, and it's a much better alternative, and they can't have that. They can't have that. And bro, this makes me so upset.
Oh yeah, man, this is so upsetting. I was going through this, I was becoming completely furious. All right, let's continue. 95% of system-generated alerts against money laundering result in false positives. That means 95% of the work they're doing is completely worthless, at least. And think about the workforce that they're employing, right? To do all this garbage, to do all this nonsense. It's busy work. That's all it is. It's work for the sake of work. Somebody I worked with once called it working work. And that's exactly what it is. It's like you're not even doing anything. Financial institutions have systems to monitor suspicious transactions such as substantial cash deposits and frequent movement of funds from one bank account to another. However, anti-money laundering statistics show that 95% of those system-generated alerts are false positives, costing firms billions of dollars every year in wasted investigation time. It's total garbage. All right. Anti-money laundering statistics show worldwide growth for the AML solutions market. Here we go. The global market for anti-money laundering solutions is expected to grow at a compounding annual growth rate of 15.6% from 2020 to 2025. This means that from $2.2 billion in 2020, the market will be valued at $4.5 billion. Stringent government policies and focus on financial institutions are the primary drivers for the market's growth. So again, right? We can't save in cash because they confiscate us through inflation, okay? You, like Nico said, you're stuck buying completely overvalued companies. And then on top of that, they print money because they have absolutely nothing else that they can do. So we have manufactured stories, we have manufactured money, and right now what I'm reading to you is a manufactured market, okay? Mm-hmm. A prison market that they're putting together for our money. Yep. Okay, and our value. Oh, I want you to think about that. Not you, Nico, but like all of us in general, like every single one of us gives our time, right? Like every single, you know, every person that goes to work and everything like that, there's, like I've said this in the past, there's no strings on our time. We give it. And for some reason, the money that we get in return has strings? Strings, regulations, walls, gates? What the F is that, man? Mm-hmm. All right. North Korea became a part of the money laundering statistics in the United States. Despite international sanctions that are supposed to block North Korea's access to the international financial system, it seems that North Korea is still able to move some of its funds. An estimated $174.8 million were laundered by North Korean-linked organizations. These funds were alleged to have been cleared through several U.S. banks. Are those banks with KYC and AML regulations, Nico?
That's the issue that they have, and this is what Ron Paul was talking about.
But it stops it.
The KYC regulation, essentially, all it tells the criminal is, as long as I check these boxes, now my money's clean. It's like, if they check the boxes, if they figure out a way to check the boxes, we've covered this on the show. We know HSBC laundered money for the Mexican drug cartel. We know that, you know, the North Koreans are essentially using U.S. banks to launder money into the system. Once the money's in the system, according to the system that's in place to stop crime, that money's clean. You don't look at that anymore. It's done its job. They pat themselves on the back and they're like, oh, we did a good job. We stopped the money laundering. But if you actually look at the data, 0.1%, that's all they stop. So they cost billions of dollars for this self-serving industry and it doesn't stop anything. And look at what it's caught. I'm sure that they whispered BS into the regulators in South Korea. And they said, listen, this is going to stop the money laundering. This is going to stop the thing. This is BS. This is an attack on your freedom. This is anti-human. This is an attack on humanity. Because what they're trying to say is that we need them. And Bitcoin makes them obsolete. You can transact with anybody freely right now across the world. And you don't have to ask anybody for permission. You don't have to do anything. You're allowed to do that. Bitcoin enables you to do that. But what they're trying to say is, hey, you know, you need this system. Dude, this is going to be such a contentious fight in the U.S., and I'm ready for it. And you have to stand up and fight. You have to say something, because if this happens in the U.S., man, this is going, dude, this is going to be rough. This is going to be rough. This is killing Bitcoin. What they're trying to do is to kill Bitcoin. That's essentially what they're trying to do.
They're trying. They're trying. But the honey badger doesn't care. All right, here we go. Most travelers are unaware of an anti-money laundering law called the Bank Secrecy Act requires individuals who depart and arrive in the U.S. to declare cash they carry when it exceeds $10,000. This law that aims to stop money laundering by criminals is costing travelers millions of dollars every year because they're not stopping criminals. They're not actually stopping any criminals with this. Okay. Almost done wrapping this up here. Here we go. The United Nations estimated that around 800 billion to 2 trillion are laundered every year. Unfortunately, about 90% of this amount remains undetected today. Based on the data and figures gathered here, it appears regulations and anti-money laundering policies do little to track down funds amassed by criminals. In fact, statistics suggest that the incurred costs outweigh the results and the benefits. This is troubling because money laundering is not just a harmless white-collar crime, it's a source of funding for all other crimes. Okay, so just think about what I just read to you guys, right? We just sat through all of this listening through all of these KYC systems showing one example after another of a system of KYC and AML that does not work. And yet we are being sold this bill of goods that we need to KYC in order to be able to transact, in order to send Bitcoin or any currency, any of those shitcoins off of an exchange to a hardware wallet or to a soft wallet or to anything that is deemed quote unquote unverifiable by their metrics. This is insane. This is complete insanity. We just showed that none of it works. All it does is create more red tape, more bureaucracy, and creates funnels for more of this fiat to get printed and dumped into these industries that do nothing but cause grief and heartache. This is disgusting. This is inhumane.
I think you absolutely nailed it. It's totally inhumane. It's self-serving. It doesn't stop crime. Look, you went through that article. We had Dr. Ron Paul. We did an episode without him and an episode with him. And this is a man who spent years of his life researching this data. And he's coming to the same conclusion that we came on our own, which is this stuff doesn't stop crime. If anything, it enables it. And what it's doing in the process, it is costing law-abiding citizens economic opportunity, and it's forcing people to save in the money that they could debase. So what is that but not evil? What is that but not anti-human? They don't want you to save. They don't want you to have that ability because it enables them for them to print money to pay for the self-serving bureaucracy. This is the situation that we're in. I'm calling it now, Phil. This is going to come to the States. This is going to come to Europe. They are going to make self-custody illegal. I'm pretty sure. I might be wrong. Hopefully I'm wrong. I'm begging that I'm wrong. But when that day comes, you better hope you have Bitcoin in self-custody. You have it off an exchange and get ready to fight. You know, and I'm not talking about a violent fight or whatever, but, you know, get ready to make a ruckus. We have to mobilize. We have to, you know, we have to be active in this sense. We have to essentially get involved in politics. Unfortunately, you know, get Bitcoiners in power in your government so that they could stop this in its tracks, because this is an attack on Bitcoin. This is an attack on your sovereignty. This is an attack on humanity. This is an attack on freedom. That's what this is. Because maybe they would have a justification if these systems were effective, but they're not. We bring the receipts. So what else are they for? They're for control and the jobs of those bureaucratic institutions. This is beyond ridiculous. But anyways, Phil, it's time for the Daily Meme Review. The Daily Meme Review is brought to you by Citadel 21. It's the best Bitcoin cultural zine. It's really cool. Look, there's a kitty cat on the website. Shop designs. Do it right now. And anyways, check out volume 14 just dropped. That is a laughing Leota. You got that right. Anyways, get yourself a physical copy. There's only 1,000 made per volume. Every volume has a different piece of art made by savage toxic Bitcoiners. Anyways, check out Citadel21.com. All right, everybody. First meme is brought to us by Honk Hogan BTC. Proof of keys, Gen 3rd. Take possession of your Bitcoin. Oh, speak of the devil. 24 word phrase. Nah, I'll let exchanges hold my Bitcoin, right? Anyways, moving on to next one. It is by Central Bank Robber Toe Pimp 21. Buy Bitcoin, kids. We'll make them work for money their whole lives, and then we'll make that money worthless. And that's exactly what they're doing. Like, that is exactly what they're doing. Anyways, next one. Me, a pleb looking a Bitcoin dump like this, this is what happens after many years in Bitcoin. This is the face that you make when Bitcoin dumps. Anyways, me attempting small talk before bringing up the world. Dude, I can't have small talk anymore. Just things happen. Anyways, I have my Bitcoin stored in my brain. Normies, what the F does that mean? Moving on to the next one. Every time I check my DM request, how's your trade going? This is so true. If you have a Twitter, then you're getting these anonymous messages, asking you very basic questions. And this is, I think, a very useful video by Dick Whitman. It's, you know, it kind of zooms into Bitcoin and the recent drop. But if you zoom out, was it really that big of a drop? You know, but anyways, awesome memes. I'm still kind of pissed off about the fail, dude. Like, we have such a fight ahead of us, guys. You have no idea. This is going to get nasty. This is going to become a very contentious political issue, especially in the Western countries as the population ages and more of the population has their wealth in crypto. I hate using that word, but, you know, a lot of people buy shit coins. That's just the reality of it. And it's going to be a contentious issue. Like, I guarantee it, you know, and the state is going to want to keep on to the power of the money printer, the power that comes with being able to debase their citizens' currency. And, you know, I think that KYC is a very powerful mechanism and justification that they have for people staying within the system under the guise that you might break the law. We kind of have to check every single transaction, you know, because some of you might be breaking the law. We know that, which is this failed, thank God, but we know that in the infrastructure bill, there was an amendment there that wanted every $600 transaction reported to the IRS. This is gonna get crazy, guys. This is gonna get rough the next couple years before it gets better. But stay with us, we'll cover it. But anyways, Phil, for that, for those awesome memes that made me feel a little bit better, I'm going to give it this boardroom chair. But not only this boardroom or this conference room chair, I'm going to give it another conference room chair and another conference room chair. That's three conference room chairs. That's an upgrade from the score 2 days ago. That's not one. There's three. What about you, Phil?
It's a disgrace that you have so many chairs. So many chairs. So much wasted money. All right. But still, noble scores. Okay. I am giving it, and I think that this is fitting, this is one of my external hard drives, right? One terabyte drive, which can host your blockchain, and it's got the official Raspi Blitz sticker on it.
Very, very cool. Good scores for some awesome memes. Guys, I'm going to make you suffer with me. I'm in a conference room until January 3rd is when I get back to Miami, and I'm going to try to come up with more scores from this conference room that I'm recording in while I'm traveling. I hate traveling while making the show. It's a terrible idea. I apologize for the decrease in production. Don't worry, it's gonna come back next year. And we also have very, very special plans for you guys that I think you'll like. But anyways, guys, please join our Telegram group. You can link us some Bitcoin memes to review. And again, you know, look at the topics that we're covering. Look at the fight that's ahead of us. It's a metaphorical fight, of course. You know, it's not a violent fight. Bitcoin is a peaceful revolution. But you're going to have to stand up, you know, and stand up for your rights, you know, to quote Bob Marley. But anyways, definitely try to subscribe to us on alternative platforms in case anything happens here, like rumble.com and our personal favorite, bitcointv.com. They don't censor there. It's awesome. It's Bitcoin TV. You can't censor on Bitcoin TV. But anyways, Phil, it's time for the Daily News. The Daily News is brought to you by CryptoCloaks.com. They make the best 3D printed Bitcoin merch, like the Trident case. Yes, you could put two Raspberry Pi 4s in there. Not just run one Bitcoin node. You could run multiple Bitcoin nodes in the Trident case. And of course, the famous Bitcoin art grenade. Really cool stuff. You could open it up, put your favorite open diamond there, and you can customize the colors. Really cool stuff. Red, cherry, blue, dark green, green, fluorescent green, so many greens, yellow, orange. Really cool stuff. Anyways, take advantage of the link down below for 5% off CryptoCloaks.com. All right, so it looks like Mark Moss called this a week in advance. He was so on target. He was absolutely right. We kept saying, just to kind of give you guys a little refresher, that central banks do not have an option. They either stop printing money and they crash the economy, or they keep printing money, they buy themselves some time, but you're going to have inflation. And what Mark Moss was predicting, no man, they have a third option. And here, what I thought that the third option was absolutely ridiculous, because we've tried this as a species, as humanity, in the past. And what is this? What am I talking about? Just to quote an article from The Guardian, we have a powerful weapon to fight inflation: price controls. It's time we use it. So what they're doing is they're prepping you. They're getting used to this idea, and what they're trying to essentially blame is that it's not the printing of money. The printing of money is not mentioned anywhere in this. What they're trying to blame is financial profit margins. So it's not the government and their irresponsible printing, right? The printing that has never happened before in human history. They're printing such records amount of money that we've shown you on this show. This has never happened before. It's not that. It's the private corporations. They are responsible. And just to quit, look how aggressive this article is, Phil. The Federal Reserve has taken a hawkish turn to this month, but cutting monetary stimulus, printing money, will not fix supply chains. Of course, it's not the printing of money, it's supply chains. What we need instead is a serious conversation about strategic price controls.
That's just a problem.
Just like after the war. Now, here's the thing. Price controls have been tried for thousands of years. They did it back in the Roman era, when they debased the money too. Okay, and they tried to control the prices. They tried to push on their debasement, the government's debasement of money. They tried to push that onto private corporations. Guess what? It never works. What happens is that you create two economies, a black market economy where the actual price, right, is actually done, a black market exchange rate that happened in Venezuela, that happened in Cuba, right? And then there's the official exchange rate. There are the official prices. And then what happens with price controls is that, just like communism, you take away the incentive of profit. So all of a sudden, what happens? Food shortages, supply shortages. Why? You're taking the incentive for people to make money. So instead of overproducing, you only produce just enough, because you know that you're not going to be able to profit from that. This is absolutely absurd, but this is part of the crack up boom. And we've been talking about this, and this is absolutely spot on from Mark Moss. So shout out to him, because he called this. And anyways, they would like to blame everything, but the printing of money. It's the Omicron variant is expected to dent global economy early in 2022. Remember, we read the expectation from the Fed. They said they're going to taper down the interest rate, that is, there was going to be all over by March. You know, everything was going to return back to normal. But now there's Omicron, right? Anyways, a winter surge in COVID-19 cases driven by the Omicron variant is promoting economists. Those economists are so goddamn so bad. They get everything wrong. To downgrade U.S. and global growth expectations in the early part of 2022 as businesses struggle with absentee and consumers stay home to avoid getting sick. No. Okay? No. I live in Florida. Everything's open. Everything's doing fine. Consumers stay home because the government tells them to stay home, because the government locks them down. You want to know how I know this? They slip up in the third passage down. The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reduced on Monday the amount of recommended time that infected people who are asymptomatic should isolate to 5 days from 10, as more research is done and thinking evolves on how to best manage the pandemic. So remember, they blamed consumers up here, but then they're saying, oh no, you know, let's move it down back to 5 from 10. So look, am I saying that, you know, the pandemic isn't bad? No, that's not what I'm saying. It could be very sick, you know, if you take the necessary steps that you want to take for your health. But what I am saying is that inflation wasn't caused by the pandemic. Inflation was caused by government printing money. Never forget that. Anyways, Phil, do you have any thoughts on Clown World? Because that's essentially what I'm covering right now. It's fucking Clown World, total Clown World.
I can't believe, I mean, I shouldn't even say that I can't believe it. That's not true. I do believe it. I just think it's incredibly sad and scary. I feel so bad, right? Like, our fail was dark. The news is dark. Thank God for Bitcoin, right? Like, that, I mean, like, but anyways, going back to this, this is scary stuff. Okay, price controls, what you just said about the incentive, I think, you know, they know exactly what they're doing, okay? I think it's disgusting and disingenuous that the businesses are being blamed for trying to do business, okay? And somehow it's all their fault, right? It's everybody's fault. Oh, there's not enough port workers. Oh, there's not enough, you know, there's not enough trucks. Oh, there's not enough this, there's not enough that. And it's like, but you're telling everyone to stay home. And you're creating all these rules that make it difficult. And then you're saying that there isn't enough people to do the work. So now all of a sudden we need to implement price controls. Like, don't get me wrong, but it's like, that doesn't seem like that fixes anything. Like, it's just like all of it. Like, I feel like, you know what I feel like? I feel like, you ever see like these, you know, these kind of things at a carnival, you know, you step into it. And, like, you have to get as many things floating around in, like, a minute as you can, and then you win a prize.
They're grabbing. They're trying to blame everything but themselves. It's not them. It's the supply chains. It's the new variant. It's the new this. Guys, you printed record amounts of money, and you have to pay the piper. And they're trying to deflect. They're trying to blame everything else but themselves. This is absolutely crazy. This is why you should buy Bitcoin. This is why we cover things like this, because this is the clown world. If your money is in the fiat system, you have to deal with all the politics with that. If you opt out, and this is why they don't want you self-custodying in Korea. Nope. If you opt out and you buy yourself and you get on the orange life raft, can't be debased, can't be easily confiscated, right? Can't be censored. So you're buying yourself safety. That's what it is, right? And, you know, physical gold, I would say, falls into that category too. But at the same time, physical gold is a lot harder to transport. It's a lot harder to verify. It's a lot harder to move, right? But anything that you own, that you actually take self-custody of, I think it's the best bet, because this is absolutely crazy. And, you know, we covered the comptroller of the currency, Tsvetaeva Morova, that wanted, you know, that the Biden administration wanted to make, you know, this huge, you know, regulatory official in the banking system in the U.S. And she wrote a paper about how if she had the choice, she would federalize, you know, all the banks, give everyone a Fed account, and essentially give the government the ability to take a haircut out of anybody's checking account to fight inflation. These people think they own you. This is what this is. They're acting like they own you. And Bitcoin allows you to own yourself. This is why they hate it. This is why they're passing these types of laws. But anyways, I have some good news. I don't know if it's good news, but anyways, you guys could read into it how you like. This is an article that came out by Forbes. New $768 billion defense bill removes cryptocurrencies from national strategy against terrorists. But wait, hold on. I thought they were used for money laundering. What's going on here? Anyways, as of yesterday...
It's complicated, Nico.
As of yesterday, President Biden signed a $768 billion defense policy bill into law that signals to the Pentagon critical issues for national security and a whopping $740 billion to the Department of Defense. According to the new law, the U.S., where are they getting all this money? They're printing it. And you know who's getting poorer because of it? You are. Anyways, according to the new law, the U.S. national strategy against terrorism and illicit finance will no longer include language explicitly describing cryptocurrency. By striking such as so-called cryptocurrencies, other methods that are computer, telecommunications, or internet-based cybercrime. The new bill updates the wording in a section called Trend Analysis of Emerging Illicit Financial Threats to now say a discussion of and data regarding trends in illicit finance involving forms of transfer of value transfer. With the specific elimination of cryptocurrencies as well as computer, telecom, or internet-based cybercrime that came after value transfer, this policy position seems to de-emphasize the concern around or targeting of emerging markets. Ah, this is some good news, Phil, I guess. Let me ask you guys something. Do you really think he understands Bitcoin? Anyways, but he definitely likes to make laws, or they definitely like to make laws. I wouldn't say it's Biden. I would say it's the whole machine. But anyways, it seems slightly out of place that cryptocurrencies would be eliminated from a trend analysis based on the burgeoning growth of the industry and the enhanced interest by both Congress and the White House in 2021 on the potential threats of cryptocurrency by financial terrorism or being used in illicit finance. So is it because of the incentives? Is it because of the incentives? Are we starting to see Bitcoiners in Congress? Are we starting to see Cynthia Lummis that sits on the Senate Banking Committee? You know, did she have a say in this, right? Those are good questions to ask, right? Are the incentives of Bitcoin, because it kind of gave a little bit of a tell here, right? Emerging technology. Is it, you know, is exactly what Ted Cruz says, right? If we pass too many regulations, what you'll do with Bitcoin is that you'll move that industry overseas. Are we seeing that type of worry from the US? I don't know. But anyways, let's keep on reading. Blockchain intelligence firms such as Chainalysis have produced reports in the past on crypto crime stating cryptocurrency remains appealing for criminals as well, due primarily to its pseudo-anonymous nature and the ease with which it allows users to send funds anywhere in the world instantly, despite its transparent and traceable design. But the good news is that cryptocurrency-related crime fell in 2020. Wait, Phil. If cryptocurrency-related crime fell in 2020, why did that South Korean exchange ban self-custody? What is going on here?
Nico, they're fighting crime. They're fighting crime, and they're stopping money laundering.
I think they're fighting their own citizens, bro, to be honest. Anyways, past reporting from Forbes Crypto have delved into what may be a false narrative into the extent to which Bitcoin really plays a role when it comes to illicit activity. The chain analysis report shows approximately 0.5 to 2% of the overall crypto activity is criminal in nature. Now, I wonder how much that compares to cash. Anyways, here's a really interesting graph, right? Shows 2019, you know, this is the estimated total, how much, you know, crypto activity occurred. This is 2017, this is 2018. 2020, it actually went down, right? And think about it. Bitcoin is terrible to commit crimes in. Why? Because it's a transparent ledger. Cash is a lot better. You know, once you get paid, it's gone, right? So am I surprised? No. Is that noise? Is that a misdirection play from the Pentagon? I have no idea. Or is it really that, you know, they can't really, you know, perhaps it's scaring innovation in the US. Perhaps that's why they changed the rhetoric. Perhaps Cynthia Lummis had something to do with it. Perhaps Ted Cruz, perhaps Senator Toomey had something to do with it. I don't know, but I just thought it was really interesting, you know, and more interesting than I also thought is that Bitcoin has to be associated with terrorism, right? So ridiculous. Anyways, what are your thoughts, yeah. Phil? What are your thoughts on that article?
This kind of, you know what, this kind of reminds me a little bit of the flip-flopping that happens when a new technology gets introduced. Like, okay, when cell phones, right, when cell phones first started to get incredibly popular, okay, like especially when, you know, like especially when I was like, you know, let's say 16, 17, you know, there was study after study, you know, talking about all of the health concerns, all of the problems with cell phones. And again, I'm not making a direct comparison from Bitcoin to cell phones. I'm just talking about the adoption of a quote unquote new disruptive technology, okay? And what happens is that you see this flip-flopping back and forth, right? From health pundits, you know, from people that, you know, from people that have stake in the game, right? From people who have stake in creating, you know, in obviously keeping cell phones off the market, right? Like traditional telecoms and stuff like that, you know, which don't get me wrong, in the end, they all ended up becoming providers anyways. But my point is that this to me is very reminiscent of all of these disruptive technology paths. Okay, it's, you see this grind, this uphill grind, like painfully moving, you know, like, oh, you know, it undermines our power, but the incentives for it are just too strong, and we can make too, you know, we can make so much profit off of this if we allow it, you know, but it undermines our power. And it's like this slow grind back and forth of consent and, you know, of essentially compromise. But look, in the end, everybody, I mean, the majority, there are places in the world where they don't even, they don't even have landlines. They never had landlines. All they did was have, or let me rephrase that. They had landlines, but they were like communal landlines, and everybody had cell phones, or I should say the majority of people had cell phones before everybody got landlines, right? So landlines just became completely obsolete. So my point is that we're going to continue to see this in Bitcoin. I think that obviously, everything, as we've said in the past, everything that has a head is going to get cut off. Everything that can be regulated, controlled, coerced is being regulated, controlled, coerced. Okay, like that's just the way that it works. And Bitcoin will continue, as painful as it is to the shitcoiners and their narratives, Bitcoin is going to continue to be that true beacon of hope and light and censorship resistance and personal freedom, personal monetary freedom. And just to be clear, when we're talking about Bitcoin, we're talking about BTC Bitcoin. So there should be no shitcoin confusion, okay? There's only one Bitcoin. Anyways.
Dude, man, after today's episode and what you did during the fail and rating all this stuff, Bitcoin really highlights how much governments don't want their citizens to have the ability to save for the future.
No, you
can't come to another conclusion after reading all of this, because it, you know, governments, you know, they're supposed to work for the people. They're supposed to, you know, they're supposed to work for you. But Bitcoin really highlights that they're working for themselves. They're institutions, they're self-serving bureaucracies that serves for themselves, even in a country like the U.S., right? It's like they're there to ensure their own survival. I can't come, you know, and that's an opinion. And of course, you know, you can't know that for sure. But after reading all of this, they don't want you to have that ability to save for the future. I can't see any of this from a different angle. Am I missing something here, Phil? Because this is all of this stuff is absolutely crazy when you just look at it in plain value. They're willing to ban a technology that gives everybody on the in the world the access to private property and the access to essentially at least be able to access some type of monetary network if it ensures their survival. They're willing to destroy it. They're willing to ban it. Right? We saw that in Turkey. We saw that in China. Not that it works. We saw that in Nigeria. They're willing to ban things that potentially could work for the majority of their population if it means ensuring their survival. So how many world governments really work for the people, and how many world governments really work for themselves? And that is what Bitcoin is highlighting on a worldwide level. Now, I have hope for the future, because open networks always beat closed networks. I think Bitcoin and shitcoins, unfortunately, have the ability to wake up the masses to the fraud and to the theft that is occurring. And, you know, I have hope that at least, you know, we have enough influence in positions of power in these governments to, you know, I don't know what else to say, Phil.
You know, it got me thinking as you were talking, is that us saving, right? Us deciding to have custody of our money, the problem that it presents, I think, to the governments and to the institutions is that the rot would have appeared much quicker. I think that that's the issue. So by forcing everyone to grind their money back into the system, right, and at the same time stealing through inflation, right, stealing through the money printing, we can never see it. Right. And think about it. Right. We're constantly inundated with all kind. Like, I mean, if you're paying attention, if you actually pay attention to news, I mean, corporate owned media, I mean, you are constantly being bombarded with absolute crap. Every day is a misery. OK, every day is a misery. Every day, terrible things are happening. You're constantly reminded how fragile and insecure everything is. And you know what I mean? Like all kinds of these weird self-defeating narratives. So you know what? Bitcoin is our beacon of hope. It's what we said before. It's our beacon of hope. And you know what? All I could say is that if they didn't have all of these levers, we would have been able to see this and we would have been able to call bullshit a lot sooner. Governments know it. We know it.
Absolutely. And look, and only Bitcoin could do this, okay? Because only Bitcoin is owned by everyone, but owned by no one. It is the only true decentralized cryptocurrency. All the rest have a single point of failure. They're controlled by people. People have huge influence over the monetary network. And, you know, that's a weakness. That's a point of weakness for governments, for states, desperate states to exploit, right? Bitcoin is the only sufficiently decentralized network that could withstand the wave that is coming, because make no mistake, it is coming, but we will cover it here on Simply Bitcoin. Anyways, Phil, it's time for... No, it's not time for anything. There was a software release today. Why don't you tell everybody about it?
Software releases. The software releases are brought to you by CipherSafe. Check them out, ciphersafe.io. I've got myself the Cipher Wheel. Store your seed in the Cipher Wheel. I think Nico's getting a Cipher Grid. Anyways, that's going to be a new product that they're launching. The link is down below. We've got Joininbox version 0.6.4 that was released. That's down below. Guys, we post every day, Monday, not every day, but 6 out of 7 days, Monday through Saturday, rain or shine, unless we tell you otherwise. You can find our audio-only episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Anchor, and you can even find us also if you want to stream us some sats. You can find us on Fountain, you can find us on Breeze. Check us out.
Awesome. Thank you, Phil. All right, guys, that was our show. If you enjoyed the show, I want to apologize. You guys know the deal. I'm traveling till the 3rd of January. It's going to be... Production is not going to be at what it is, and I have these white headphones that also look weird. So I apologize, but don't worry. Next year, it will come back. And guys, you know the drill. If you enjoyed the show, smash that like button. And of course, if you want to continue hearing the catastrophic fails from nation states that are just disintegrating before our eyes and the Bitcoin news from the pleb perspective, definitely consider subscribing. And we'll see you tomorrow, guys, for a brand new episode of Simply Bitcoin.
KYCAML is enabling criminals to legitimize themselves and criminalize all of us.